Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it's about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 316 in this series. It is September 8th, and to my right is the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl?
We have Shante Garth, our producer, in the booth.
And we're so glad you're back with us.
We sure are, and we have classic radio all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to have a terrific episode of Escape, starring Howard McNear. And then it's The Great Gildersleeve, starring Hal Perry. And then after that, a good detective adventure of crime and Peter Chambers, starring Dane Clark. But before we do any of that, I want to welcome my good pal, Steve Darnall. He is in the studio with us to talk a few minutes about Nostalgia Digest. And if people do not know about the Nostalgia Digest, you must be living under a rock, because this publication has been around like 30 plus years, right?
Actually, we're just finishing up 44 years.
Oh my God, so I was way off.
But you know what?
Of course, I'm only 30 years old.
Time flies.
Most of our lives.
Now, wait a minute.
It's older than you are.
44 years it has been around?
Yeah, Chuck Shaden started this in 1974, and I took over from Chuck in 2005. And so, yes, I'm in 13 and a half years as publisher. Yes.
Wow.
Look, I'm as surprised as you are.
Yeah. Now, tell everyone listening about Nostalgia Digest, because, folks, if you subscribe to Nostalgia Digest, we have a very special offer for you.
Yes.
But not only is it a special offer, it is a special magazine. It is a magazine that our listeners really should have, because it's all about the golden age of radio, but it also talks about movies and TV and all kinds of things nostalgia-oriented.
Absolutely, yes. Nostalgia is a very broad umbrella. And so, yes, we've always tried to make each article sort of like Chicago weather, which is this day's going to end. The next day will be totally different. And so, for instance, in the new Autumn issue, we have an article about Marlene Dietrich. And then we have an article about the comedy team of Olsen and Johnson. And we have an article about your old friend, Stan Freeberg.
Yeah.
And an article about John Carradine and the cover story about Ozzie and Harriet on radio. So, yes, every article is different from the one before it, because we know that, you know, there are people who love radio, and that's great, and there's things in there for them. We also know there are people who don't even know about old-time radio, but that's okay, because they may watch Turner, or they may be fans of Art Deco design, and there's something in there for them as well.
Well, I got to tell you, folks, I have been a subscriber to Nostalgia Digest for probably 20 plus years, and that's why I thought it was only maybe 30 years old, but 44 years. Mm-hmm. But I've been getting the magazine, and I this is the God's honest truth. When the magazine comes in the mail, I'm so excited to open it up, to crack that wafer seal and open it up and read it, because I'm going to learn something, and I'm going to be entertained, because the articles are not only written by yourself but also experts in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And not only does it have great articles, but there is your full schedule of the classic radio shows you are playing on Those Were the Days, which is Saturday afternoons 1 to 5, WDCB 90.9. And I listen.
Right. Thank you.
And then there is our schedule,
yes.
Lisa. The WGN Radio Theater schedule's in there as well.
Right, and we think this is a perfect partnership that we have WGN Radio Theater with you, because I think we complement each other really, really well here rather than compete with each other.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got, like you say, all these expert articles. We play radio shows. You play radio shows. There's no reason that anybody listening to WGN Radio Theater, there's no reason why they wouldn't appreciate Nostalgia Digest.
Well, I agree, and it's so great that we're in a city that has this much old-time radio. I mean, my goodness, just think that we were on for 4 hours today, you're on for 3 hours tonight.
And that's because we have enough people out there,
yes,
that still appreciate it.
It's
so
thrilling.
We hope that they'll want to learn, you know, a little bit about the background
as
well.
I meet people all the time, and, you know, they say, oh, you're on WGN Radio, and what do you do? And I say, well, I play the classic radio. Oh, I love old-time radio shows.
Great?
And how much more you appreciate it, actually, when you're educated as well.
Well, that's true. And Carl and I were talking, about this before we went on the air, that you learn from the people who were there, you learn from the people who've studied this stuff and researched it. And so, yes, if you can listen and say, oh, that's Howard McNear, or,
yeah,
oh, I know how they did that sound effect. You know, there's something very exciting about that, and it really does draw you in, I think, as a listener.
Yep.
And as you point out, yes, the digest includes the schedule for your show. So if people get the autumn issue, for instance, and they're thinking, what are Carl and Lisa playing October 13th? Look
there
no further.
Is.
There
it's
it is.
Right
and
there.
Speaking of Howard McNear, we're going to be playing an episode of Escape with him in our first hour.
Yep.
Did you know that?
I did.
Oh, okay. See, I thought that was just a big coincidence.
He looked in the schedule. He saw it in the schedule. So tell our listeners about, okay, so it's four times a year. The magazine comes out, and it's $17 a year for the four issues.
Yes.
But if you subscribe for 2 years,
yes,
it's less. It's only $30. It's not $17. Per year, it's only
$30. $30 for 2 years.
But tell them what else they get.
Yes, and if you go tonight, or well, anytime, if you purchase a $30 subscription for 2 years, and in the course of placing your order, you mention WGN, you will not only get the 2 years of the digest, you will also get a four CD set of the Twilight Zone radio dramas that Carl Amari produced not too long ago, but
yeah,
New Time Radio.
Yeah, and that's a $27.99 value.
Absolutely.
So you're only paying $30 for the four. You'll get eight issues over 2 years. You will love it.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll also get a $27.99 four CD set of the Twilight Zone radio dramas.
Absolutely free.
Free with your
bonus,
with your purchase. So tell them how to order this.
Absolutely. You can order a subscription to Nostalgia Digest at our website, nostalgiadigest.com. If you are among those who has not yet explored the World Wide Web, you can also call our offices at 773-769-6575. I mean, you can call now, but I won't be there.
What about Pony Express?
Pony Express, well, of course,
too?
You can mail us at Box 25734 in Chicago, 60625.
That's a lot of numbers.
That's a lot of numbers.
I'm going to help you out. We'll post it.
Bless your heart.
We'll post it on our Facebook page. So if you want to refer to that, go check out our Facebook page. We'll post a picture of the Nostalgia Digest. We'll put the phone number on there and some other details.
Yeah, folks, beautiful. You're going to love it. It's a great magazine. I'm fully endorsing it because I get it. I mean, I get this magazine and I love it. But really the easiest way is just go to nostalgiadigest.com. Just fill it all out and make sure you mention WGN and get a 2-year subscription because you'll get the Twilight Zone radio dramas as well. So we're kind of out of time, Steve.
Of course.
So I just want to say it's great to see you.
Thank you
a tremendous job with Those Were the Days. And you do a tremendous job with Nostalgia Digest, and it's always a pleasure to have you here.
Carl, Lisa, thank you both. It's always a pleasure to join you, and thanks for all your support of this field and our publication.
You too. It's great seeing you, Steve.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, it is an episode of Escape. Stick around. All right, welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. It's time now for an episode of Escape Radio's greatest series of high adventure. Came to radio 1947, lasted seven seasons on the radio, and William Conrad and Paul Frees were the voices of Escape. They often played roles, too, like you're going to hear in this episode called The Invader. It's a sci-fi drama about a hen-pecked little man who contacts a spaceship visiting from another star. We have Howard McNear starring in this, but listen to the cast. Edgar Barrier, Faye Baker, Paul Frees, Peter Leeds, and William Conrad. Terrific episode. Right now, let's go back to March 23rd, 1953, part one of Escape.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are seated before the dials of your radio receiver, listening to a faint voice from the blackness beyond, while the one who speaks with words of friendship is debating the destruction of your world.
Listen now as Escape brings you Michael Gray's exciting story, The Invader.
Here in the Nevada desert, our forward observation post is a slit trench less than 2 miles from ground zero of Operation Doorstep 8A bomb test. The time exactly 30 seconds to H hour. That's the voice of our official guide, Colonel Jim Donovan.
All personnel, put on protective glasses and get below trench abutments. We have H hour minus 16, 15... 14, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
There it goes. There it is. You'll hear the sound of the explosion any second now.
Did you see that flash, Commander?
Yes. Check the cyclo gauges for reaction.
Yes, sir. No reaction, zero count. What an extraordinary race.
Very primitive. The main object appears to be to kill each other off at periodic intervals.
I wonder why the Council doesn't order extinction.
There's hope. That's why we've been sent.
But the red zero disks vanished on the same job last Delo. Why waste more lives? The things should be exterminated.
Don't be unscientific. The red zero disks probably disobeyed orders and landed on water.
Water?
Yes, water.
Oh, what a place. What do they call those creatures, Commander?
Humans.
Humans? What an odd name.
I'm afraid they're a very odd race.
You, Al?
Oh, yes. Yes, Martha.
I saw the bomb test on television this morning. You see it in school?
No, dear.
Oh. Where are you going now?
Into the lab. Call me when dinner's ready, will you, dear? Yeah, let's see.
Albert, I want to talk to you.
Huh?
I said I want to talk to you.
Oh, yes, dear, of course.
I saw Mrs. Warren today.
Yes, dear.
Will you stop messing around and pay attention to what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, dear.
I should merely like to remind you that Mrs. Warren is your school principal's wife. She hinted that he's not pleased with your work. In fact, he's not
pleased at all. Albert, did you hear what I said?
Yes. Yeah, yes, dear.
Come back here. Now, stand still and listen to me. How do you think I feel having the principal's wife laughing at you and laughing at me, too? This is the third job you've had in the past 2 years, and you are going to keep this one. I know it's hard for a scientific genius to settle down teaching 12th grade chemistry, but this time you're going to stick, I mean it, Albert. You're making yourself the laughingstock of the school with your crazy experiments, and it's got to stop. I'm just not going to spend the rest of my life following you around from job to job like a gypsy.
Well, of course, dear. I understand.
You'd better understand. I'm not going to stand for it anymore. If you're not down for dinner in 5 minutes, there won't be any dinner for you.
Commander? Magnetron's oscillating.
Probably magnetic storms.
No, it's a definite signal on our channel. Perhaps the council's calling.
Raise and bring it in.
Station MXA calling. Station MXA calling. Station MXA. Over and out.
That's not the council. Check the frequency.
It's the emergency band.
Somebody's playing a joke. Tell them to clear the ether.
Stellar disk white zero now. Who's calling?
Moment. Ask for code check.
Stellar disk white zero now. Give name. Code check.
Station MXA. Where are you?
Give me the frequent tone. Listen, MXA. This is commander of Delta ship white zero null on space mission. Get off this channel. Make a note for the log. We'll report it back to the council. What was his identification?
Sounded like MXA.
MXA. MXA. Check the cyclo listing.
There's no such station listed, Riss.
There must be. Cross-check and fix.
Yes, Riz. No? Absolutely no listing.
Mm. Oh, no. It's impossible. Those blundering primates couldn't have the intelligence.
What's primates, Riz?
Humans. It's incredible, but use the magna band. We'll keep emergency open. Fix and raise MXA immediately.
Delta ship white zero null. Delta ship white zero null.
Are you coming down to supper?
Martha. Martha, it's amazing. I've made contact. I spoke to them.
Spoke to who?
Delta white zero null. I've checked the station list. There's no such call sign. It means only one thing, Martha. One thing. Space. Men in space. You know what that means?
Oh, stop it! Albert, when are you going to grow up? Your dinner's getting cold.
Commander Delta White Zero Null, calling station MXA. Where are you located?
Commander Delta White Zero Null, this is station MXA. MXA, I'm located at La Mirada, California.
What planet?
Planet Earth. That's continent of North America. Who are you? Repeat who you are. Over.
Are you humans?
Yes, yes. You aren't...
No, of course not. We're of Epsilon from the race of planetoid Delta.
Delta?
On mission of exploration for the Council.
Council?
The Council of Quantum Major of the Nebulae Ursula. We're arriving in your atmosphere in 2 delos more to examine your planet. We cannot continue this unauthorized contact without permission from the Council. If granted, we will raise contact again at your earliest light time tomorrow.
Oh, did you hear that, Martha? Did you hear?
Are you or are you not coming down to dinner?
Oh, I've done it. Out there in space is another intelligence, another race.
And I've made contact.
For the last time, are you coming down?
Martha, listen, I've made one of the most important discoveries of the century. The first contact with another world, another people, or something. Think what it'll mean for civilization. Think what they'll bring. Maybe a whole new way of life.
Just another one of those radio amateur friends of yours playing a joke.
Oh, no, Martha, that's impossible. The frequency's completely outside the UHF band. No station could even reach the range, much less transmit speech. Oh, yes, tomorrow I can ask questions now. I can find out more.
All right, now, I've stood enough. I've watched you wreck job after job with your silly crackpot ideas. I've been hoping that you'd come to your senses.
Oh, but you heard, Martha.
I've put up with this pile of junk long enough. If you don't come to your senses once and for all, I'm through with you.
Oh, but Martha,
I'll give you 5 minutes more to wash and get downstairs, or I'm through Albertana. I mean it.
All right, that's the first portion of Escape with the Invader from 1953. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I made a huge boo-boo, Lisa.
Oh, well, I'm not
surprised.
I forgot
to mention the text in line.
Right.
And I got to tell you, folks, if I don't mention the text in line, people don't text in as much, and then Lisa falls asleep. By about the second hour of the show, she is out like
a light. You know, I'm responding to texts right now. While you're taking a little rest over there and texting, I'm responding to texts.
So please text in so Lisa has something to do, and she reads me all the texts. It's great.
I do. He doesn't read, so that way he can just listen.
Right.
It's hard for him to
read. Memorize all these classic radio shows.
You pretty much do, actually.
So the text in line is 312-981-7200. So do text us, 312-981-7200. We've had a lot of people that asked what the website is again for the Nostalgia Digest. And I will tell you once again, it is very easy. NostalgiaDigest.com.
And I did post a photo of the Nostalgia Digest magazine with Steve Darnell on our Facebook page. It includes the website and the phone number. So if you couldn't get it all that quickly, check out our Facebook page. Also, I want to mention, because we've had a lot of texts, yes, Floyd the Barber is Howard McNear.
Yes.
So that's why it sounds like him. It is him.
It is him. That's
so,
right.
So just to clear things up.
And that's the crazy thing. When it is the same person, when it is the person, it sounds like him.
Yeah. Although sometimes the same person sounds different when they're on when they do different characters, so you wouldn't even notice.
He was great, right?
But
he also on Gunsmoke, he played Doc. He was Doc on Gunsmoke too.
I remember the Andy Griffith.
I'm talking about now on the radio show, not on the television show. But Andy, he was Floyd the Barber.
Yeah, he was.
All right, let's get back now to the Invader on Escape.
Oh. Oh. Albert.
Yeah.
Wake up, Albert.
Oh,
seven.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm kind of seven. Oh, yes, of course.
Hurry up and get showered. You'll be late.
Of course. Oh, I mustn't be late. Oh, my. Let me see now. Early light time. Early light time. Oh, I hope I'm not late.
Where are you going?
He said he'd make contact early and late. Light time. Don't worry about breakfast, dear. Just fix some coffee.
You're getting showered and dressed now. Now, do you hear me? You know what the principal said the last time you were late.
Martha, I'm not going to school.
Yep.
Oh, I can't. What? Don't you understand, dear? Today I'm going to contact Delta White. No. In fact, I'm going to contact him right now.
You mean to tell me that you're risking your job for that crazy...
Oh, Martha, it's not crazy. Nobody on this earth could have transmitted on that frequency. There's only one explanation.
All right. I can see that there's only one solution to this. And you've asked for it.
Martha, don't. Martha, stop. What are you going to do? Martha!
Get away from that door.
Martha,
by the
please.
Time I finish with this place, get out of my way. All you need is a broom.
Martha, stop. Stop it, I say, Martha. Now then, you listen to me for a change. For 14 years, I've been teaching sniveling little monsters to blow themselves up for less money than a garbage collector. And for 10 years, I've listened to you nag me out of any sort of manhood. But if you lay one finger on that equipment or come in this room again without my express permission, I'll kill you.
We will return to Escape in just a moment, but first, in your town, in the next town, across the nation, you'll find the Red Cross. But the Red Cross is above and beyond all boundary lines, for it is infinite in its scope. In time of hardships, epidemics, floods, fires, the Red Cross is the symbol and soul of humanity. You are part of that symbol because it is the money that you contribute that enables the Red Cross to continue its great work. Answer the call, and humanity will answer you with gratitude. And now, back to Escape.
XA calling Delta White, zero null. Station MXA calling Delta White, zero null.
This is Delta White, zero null to station MXA. Can you read us?
You're coming in loud and clear.
Council authorizes to continue contact. What is your name and function?
My name's Tanner. Albert Tanner. I'm a chemistry teacher, La Mirada High School.
A scientist?
Yes. Or kind of, in a way.
We too have servants of learning. Did you construct this magnetron channel?
Yes, but I'm afraid it's a bit elementary. I had to use war surplus stuff, and that's never very satisfactory.
Oh, is there war in your territory at this moment?
Oh, no, no, Commander. Oh, everything's quite peaceful here.
Good. We're looking for a suitable land space and don't want to arrive in the middle of your hostilities.
Well, you'd be very welcome, Commander. We've plenty of space and open fields all around us here. It'd be a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Tanner.
You're welcome, Commander. Might I ask, what is the position of your planet?
Planetoid Delta is 5 light years behind the summer solstice.
I'm afraid I don't understand that.
In elementary mathematical formulae, its gamma is to the power of epsilon to the 7th vector.
Oh, of course. Yes, of course. Now, how is it we haven't observed your planetoid before? I couldn't find you on any of our star atlases.
We're exactly opposite your sun. This would make observation by ordinary optical instruments impossible. But with our magnetic electroscopes, we are able to filter out the sol rays and observe you perfectly.
I see. Oh, I see, Commander. When do you expect to arrive?
By your time, late in your so-called afternoon. We shall determine that by later contact.
And Commander, might I ask a personal question?
Of course.
What do you, what do you look like?
Like all members of the race Delta of the nebulae Ursula, of course. Is there any other way to look?
Marada Police Department, Sergeant Williams.
This is Mrs. Tanner, 35 Crescent Heights. My husband just made contact with a Delta Zero something in space, and they're going to land this afternoon.
Oh, would you say that a little slower, please?
I said that the men from space are going to land this afternoon. I heard my husband talking to them. You've got to send some policemen out here, because I'm afraid...
Oh, yes, ma'am. Now, take it easy. How did you say your husband got this information?
Through the radio.
Oh, sure.
He got through his radio.
Sure, I understand. These spacemen radioed your husband.
But I keep telling you, I heard them. The door was open. I could hear them very distinctly. Oh, please, 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 you've got to send help.
Yeah, this sounds like a matter for the Army, Mrs. Tanner. Why don't you call them?
Oh, but I don't see why I can't call. Oh, all right, I'll call them. Oh, what's their number? Oh, please, please,
yeah,
hurry.
Well,
tell
one
me, tell
moment.
Oh, please, hurry, hurry. Are you still there? Please.
It's Murata 4637.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you. I'll call them right away.
Yeah, you do that, Mrs. Tanner. Yes, they'll take care of
it. 7 5 6 3. Oh, no, 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 no. M-I-4-6-3-7. Oh, please, hurry, hurry, please, hurry. Oh.
U.S. Army, Camp Reynolds.
Can I speak to somebody in charge, please, please? It's urgent, it's very
urgent. What's it about, please?
We're being invaded by Delta White. I mean, it's spaceships that are coming.
Hold the line, please. I'll give you the duty officer.
Are you still there?
Officer of the day, Lieutenant Jacobs.
My name is Mrs. Tanner, Mrs. Albert Tanner, 35 Crescent Heights. Now, please, please, you've got to send soldiers out here right away. My husband is dying to
death. Oh, that's interesting, Commander. How long have you been in space?
By your time, 5 months. But remember, our speed is twice the speed of light.
Uh-huh. Do you use atomic energy?
Discarded in our bleak age. We use the natural magnetic forces that surround the universe.
Well, what about friction heat caused by your velocity through the atmosphere?
Our speed is adjustable by control of the magnetic fields we ride in. In any case, the disc hull is of Trexendium. It's pressured to withstand anything. Anything, that is, but water.
But water. But everything in nature has water. Even the human body is 80% water.
What? You have water in your body?
Yes, it's in different forms, such as blood or sweat, but it's still water.
Thank you for warning us.
What's wrong with water?
To humans, apparently, nothing. But to our life form, water is a deadly corrosive.
But our atmosphere contains water.
We know, and have sufficient exterior protection for the moisture of your atmosphere. Did you say your habitation was inland?
Yes, yes, you're perfectly safe, sir. We're over 100 miles from the nearest ocean or river. Now, if you will follow my carrier signal down to the landing, you'll be all right.
Thank you, Tanner. I'll report your assistance to the Council. Do you think your authorities will object to our visit?
I'm sure they won't, sir. They'll be honored. We'll all be honored.
I'm either mad or is this a joke? Are you or are you not going to help?
For the weekend, and I've got an appointment. Can't it wait till Monday?
Look, either you send help right away, or I'll send a report of your conduct to my congressman with a copy to your commanding general.
Yes, Mrs. Tanner, I'll be over.
Trust that human, Commander?
Well, there isn't much option. We've orders to carry out. It's an incredible race, but Tanner seems harmless enough.
We're meeting pressure, Riss.
Probably entering the outer atmosphere. Better start degaussing and settle on his carrier.
2700-02. No change.
Switch on the water oscillograph.
Oscillograph on.
Variation?
None.
Good. We'd better check again with Tanner until we see ground.
Right away, Riss.
Delta to MXA. Delta to MXA. Over.
MXA to Delta. You're in, loud and strong.
We're entering your atmosphere.
I'll check your approach on radar and keep tracking you.
We're going off ether. Leave your channel open.
Albert.
Yeah, Martha, I thought I told you
this. This is Lieutenant Jacobs from Camp Reynolds, Albert. I heard you talking to the Delta man, and I was so scared.
Your wife was worried, so she wanted me to come over.
Oh, I see. I suppose she told your story about men from space?
Well, yes, sir.
Oh, all right. You probably think I'm crazy, but you'll see. They're coming in right now, using my channel as a ground approach. You've been through signal school?
I'm from 27th Signal Corps, sir.
I see. Then you'll recognize the equipment.
Something wrong, Rick.
Wrong. Reverse the field. Quick.
There's water.
Tanner.
We're approaching water, Rick.
Tanner. Cross-check our position. We have a danger reading.
You're heading straight for us, Commander. You're safe. Why, you're perfectly safe.
Check it again.
There's a great deal of water.
Did you check it again?
Yes, I did. There's a great deal of water in.
Tanner.
A great big body of water.
There's water down there. Tanner, our signals are at danger. Strong danger. Cross-check your fix. Counter-reverse the magnet. It's water. It's water. Masses and masses of water. We've hit water! It's an ocean! Help! Help! We're burning! Ah!
Delta? Delta! What's happened?
Cross-check their position, sir. The signal's getting weaker, but your fix is right. It's within 100 yards of this set.
Let's get outside. Maybe it crashed into the fields.
Where is it? There's nothing out there.
But there must be. Maybe it crashed into the trees or... Come on, come on.
Albert! Albert! Look! Look!
I'll read it, sir, but I don't
Go
think
on. It... Go on.
On Saturday, July 14th, at 1400 hours, a telephone call was received from Mrs. Albert Tanner, etc., etc., and so forth. And on going out to the back lot, we could see no sign of the space disk. Our attention was then drawn by Mrs. Tanner to the fish pond from which steam could be seen rising. On inspecting the pond, a small circular object approximately 8 inches in diameter could be seen floating on the surface. On attempting to retrieve the object, it disintegrated as if attacked by a powerful corrosive. End of report.
Well, you forgot about the men inside. You've got to say something about their size.
We never saw them, Mr. Tanner.
Well, what do you do? Don't do that! Well, Lieutenant,
Mr. Tanner, Mr. Tanner, I'm doing this for both of us. If I sent in the report, nobody would believe it. It's better this way.
No! It's the truth! You saw it happen. Why, you know it happened.
The only thing I know is there's no proof. As far as I'm concerned, it didn't happen. I never saw anything. I never heard anything. That's going to be my report, Mr. Tanner. No occurrence. Incident closed. Good afternoon, Mr. Tanner.
Under the direction of Anthony Ellis, Escape has brought you The Invader by Michael Gray, starring Howard McNair. Faye Baker was heard as Martha, with Edgar Berrier as the commander. Featured in the cast were Paul Frees, Peter Leeds, Bill Bissell, and Leroy Leonard. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Tomorrow night, Lux Radio Theater brings back The Miracle of Our Lady of Fatima for another thrilling performance. 11-year-old Susan Whitney recreates her original screen role as the child who first saw the prophetic vision, co-starring with J. Carol Nash. Also, tomorrow night, and most of these same CBS radio stations, don't miss Joseph Cotten in Suspense's eerie production of the musical drama Tom Dooley. This is Roy Rowan speaking. And remember, daytime is a gay time with Arthur Godfrey Time on the CBS Radio Network.
That is Escape with the Invader, starring Howard McNear, from March 29th, 1953, as heard on CBS. Let's take a quick break, then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. You know what, Lisa? People have been signing up to the Classic Radio Club pretty much every day. I mean, every day I have tons of people signing up to the Classic Radio Club, and I'm so excited about it because I wish I would have started this club, seriously, I wish I would have started this club years ago, because it just hit me maybe about 3-4 months ago to create a club for our listeners that they could all join and all be part of, and we send them 5 CDs with 10 of the greatest classic radio shows of all time every single month. So every month you will get 5 CDs, 10 classic radio shows with liner notes by me. And these are the best of the best from my library of over 100,000 shows. I'm picking the best sounding shows, the most interesting shows, and you will never, ever get a duplicate show as long as you're part of the Classic Radio Club. Now, I know you signed up, Lisa, and I do thank you for that.
I did. As a matter of fact, I had a conversation about this with my father-in-law, who wants to sign up for the club as well, but I told him it'll cost him a little extra.
Well, you know, I've priced this so anybody can join. Now, to join, it's only $4.99 plus shipping and handling, and you get the first 5 CD collection, which has 10 awesome classic radio shows. I mean, $4.99 to join. Now, if you join and you love it, you will continue to get another 5 CD set with 10 more shows. We charge a little bit more each month for that. It's just $10 more, so it's $14.99 plus shipping and handling every month after that. So the first month it's $4.99. After that, it's $14.99, but the product that you're getting is a $39.95 value, so it's quite a good deal, and I think you're really going to enjoy being part of the club.
So you can go to ClassicRadioClub.com, or you can call toll-free anytime, 24-7, 888-642-6556. That's 888-642-6556.
Yep, and do join, because I know you'll love it, and people are joining like crazy, and I've been picking out these shows. I'm working about 3 months in advance, and I'm telling you, I am coming up with these incredible shows to send to our listeners. So do join the Classic Radio Club, classicradioclub.com. All right, when we come back from the news, it's a very early episode of The Great Gildersleeve. Gildersleeve started in 1941, and we have a 1941 broadcast, Hal Perry. And then after that, Crime and Peter Chambers. So good detective adventure from 1954.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David. It is 12:10, which means happy Sunday morning to you, Lisa,
happy
and to
Shante,
and to David, and to Roger, because I saw Roger walking around here. He's got a red shirt on,
and he's holding red licorice.
Yeah, so it kind of blends in.
You can't even notice. I think that hides the licorice that way.
You think he had 4 hot dogs today, like he did last time?
I don't know. He didn't do real well with the hot dogs.
No, maybe he probably learned his lesson. He probably only had three.
Maybe only three. That's exactly what I was going to say. Three is enough.
In this hour, we have a very early episode of The Great Gildersleeve, and on this particular episode, Birdie quits to go work for Judge Hooker. So that's going to be an interesting episode from 1941. Hal Perry starring in that program. And then in hour three, we will have Crime and Peter Chambers starring Dane Clark. Good detective adventure from 1954. But right now it's time to play our game, Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What is the movie,
Lisa?
The
movie is Monsters, Inc., 2001.
Monsters, Inc., yeah, great movie.
It is.
All right, what do they win?
They're going to win 2 tickets to see Ghost the Musical.
Ghost.
Remember the movie?
Yeah, sure.
Based on the movie.
Whoopi Goldberg in there, and
yes.
See Demi Moore. And
right.
Then Patrick Swayze.
Well, it won't be with them, right?
I know, they're not in it. But
well, he's no longer with us.
I
but,
know. He's a ghost, unfortunately.
Yes, poor, I know.
Poor guy.
I know.
Guy was a... I got to work with him in a movie.
I worked with him as well.
He was so nice.
Yeah, he was
such
really
a nice
special.
Man. Yep.
So it's
what
playing...
movie did you work with him in?
I worked with him in the TV show The Beast. I was there the whole season one.
Wow.
And we never got to do a season two because he was sick. But he was a trooper, I tell you.
And I worked with him in the movie Next of Kin.
I don't know when that was. A long time, probably
Patrick
earlier.
Swayze and Liam Neeson in that movie. Yeah.
No, this was not too long before we started. Anyways, Ghost the Musical is playing at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. Two tickets, and we're going to go for caller number 6.
Number 6. All right. Give us a call, 312-981-7200. Play the game with us on the air live. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. So glad you were caller 6. Are you a fan of Monsters, Inc.?
Oh, definitely.
I've seen it so many times with my kids. We'll see what we can do here. Roger, you with us?
Hi, Kelly.
No, we'll just do it ourselves.
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. Yes, you are. He has arrived. Okay.
Oh.
Here we go. Quote number 1. I don't like morning people. Number 2, I'm actually not funny. And number 3, I don't believe I ordered a wake-up call. Kelly, what feels for you? Do you want a lifeline? You want to go for it here?
I think I'm going to go with 1.
Well, I actually feel that I don't like morning people. Carl, what about you?
It's not 1.
You don't like that one? Okay.
I'm going to go with 3.
I don't believe I ordered a wake-up call.
Yeah.
Okay, Roger?
Yeah, unfortunately, this is going to be weird. I agree with Carl.
That is weird. All right, let's hear it.
I don't believe I ordered a wake-up call.
And there it is.
You're right.
They were right. But you know what, Kelly? You're the winner, so it's okay. You have won 2 tickets to Ghost the Musical. It is playing through October 14th at Theater at the Center, which is in Munster, Indiana.
Sounds like somebody's riding a horse. Hear it?
It's TikTok. I hear TikTok.
A clip? Sounds like it's a sound
it
effect.
It sounds like a clock.
It's like the Lone Rangers and Hopalong Cassidy are walking together.
The golden age of radio on your brain. I hear a clock. I think it's Roger's heart beating. So
all those red veins.
But you have, this is at Theater at the Center, which is in Munster, Indiana. Great theater. And it sounds like a great show. It is based on the 1990 film. Can you believe that was 1990? Anyway, check it out at theateratthecenter.com or call the box office at 219-836-3255. Thanks for calling in, Kelly.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Kelly. All right, so, hey, we got it right. Roger,
you did.
Roger
Good
and
job,
I
Roger.
Agreed on something.
Ooh, I'm so special.
How many hot dogs, Roger, did you have today?
No hot dogs.
No hot dogs. All right. Can't call you the hot dog man then tonight.
No.
We can.
Call you the licorice man. I saw you eating licorice.
Got that right.
All right.
Got that right.
We have an episode. You're going to love this, Roger. It's a very early episode. As you know, The Great Gildersleeve made a transition, sort of was a spinoff out of Fibber McGee and Molly, and that happened in 1941. In fact, it happened August 31st, 1941. And just a couple of months later, we have this episode from November 9th of 1941. And on this particular program, Judge Hooker hires Birdie away from Gildersleeve. Let's hear how it all turns out. Part 1 now of The Great Gildersleeve.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve. Each week at this time, Kraft presents from Hollywood, California, Harold Perry as The Great Gildersleeve, written by Leonard L. Levinson. We'll hear from The Great Gildersleeve in just a moment. But first, we might say that one good thing at least has come out of the world crisis, and that is that we Americans have learned that the right kind of food, and plenty of it, is vitally essential to national health and morale. And realizing this, we Americans can become the strongest nation on earth. That's why you homemakers should know about delicious parquet margarine, made by Kraft. Because parquet margarine is an economical source of nourishment and energy your whole family needs. Yes, parquet margarine is a highly nutritious food, one of the best energy foods you can serve. And equally important is the fact that every pound of parquet contains 9,000 units of vitamin A. What's more, your whole family will like parquet margarine's delicate, appetizing flavor. Yes, delicious parquet margarine makes everything taste better, whether you serve it at the table or use it for baking or pan frying. So try this nourishing, economical food. Buy a pound or two of grand-tasting parquet margarine tomorrow. Just ask your dealer for parquet. P-A-R-K-A-Y. And now let's visit our friend, the great Gildersleeve.
Hello. Where is everybody?
Oh.
Oh, there you are, Marjorie.
Oh, hello, Uncle Throckmorton. Did you bring the things I wanted for dinner?
Yes. Here's the flowers, the after-dinner mints, and the candles for the cake.
I hope this wasn't too much trouble.
Not at all, my dear. The market was so crowded, I just drifted with the tide. That's how I happened to get this quart of clams.
Yeah. How many of these candles do you think we should put on Judge Hooker's birthday cake, Uncle?
Well, I don't know. How many cakes did Bertie bake?
Oh, now, Uncle, I don't think it'd be polite to put on more than 30.
Well, if that's all the candles you're going to use, you better burn them at both ends, then.
I don't think he's that old.
No? Say, he's got a Lincoln penny that he got from Lincoln.
Uncle Morton, I do wish you'd make an effort to get along better with the judge. Especially tonight at dinner.
Well, seeing that it's his birthday, I'll give him a break.
You will?
Yes. I won't insult him until he insults me first.
Say, do you think he's going to be surprised when he finds out we know it's his birthday?
Oh, he'll be dumbfounded. He's got a good start, too. He's been dumb ever since he was founded.
Oh, Uncle. Now, Judge Hooker's really awfully sweet.
Well, it doesn't show in his face, then. Why, George, if I had a puss that sour, I'd take it out and drown it. Say, something smells mighty nice around here.
Oh, it's a dinner Bertie's fixing.
Oh.
And is it going to be delicious?
You know, that Bertie is a real treasure. Her dinners are always delicious. The only trouble is I'm beginning to develop what is known as second helping spread.
Well, what do you mean?
Well, my laps are starting to overlap.
Now, don't talk that way, Uncle Mort.
Huh?
You're just the right weight for a man of your, weight.
Yeah. Well, maybe so. Everything's expanding these days.
Oh, by the way, Oliver Honeywell's coming to dinner, too.
What? Oliver again? Seems that every time we sit down to eat, there's that overgrown St. Bernard puppy yapping around the table.
Well, his family's out of town, and Oliver doesn't like restaurants.
Of course not. They charge for meals. You know, I don't like to appear inhospitable, Marjorie, but I'm beginning to get bored with Oliver as a boarder.
Well, his family will be back by Thanksgiving. Say, by the way, when is Thanksgiving?
Anytime Oliver's family comes back. Another thing, Marjorie, can't you persuade him to get a haircut?
Oh, well, he says the barbershops frighten him.
Huh?
He cuts his own hair. And it gets long enough for him to reach.
Ew. Well, somebody should drop a hint that it's time for the fall harvest. Or else buy him a paper of booby pins.
Uncle, you mean bobby pins.
You heard me, Marjorie. Oh, let me see. Have we forgotten anything?
Oh, I don't think so. Let me see now. Dinner, presents.
Yeah. Oh, I ordered a cute singing telegram delivered at 10 p.m.
Oh. Say, what time what time did you tell the judge to be here?
Well, I said that... Oh, my goodness. Where's my hat?
Right in your hand. What's wrong?
I forgot to invite somebody.
Who?
Judge Hooker.
Oh. Hey, Marge, here comes Seabiscuit.
Why, Leroy, what do you mean? Oh, hello, Oliver.
Oh, Midgey Witchy. Gee, you look lovely this evening. How do I look?
Gee, you look lovely too, Oliver.
Hello, Meatball.
Hi, Oliver. How's all your allergics tonight?
Oh. Leroy, now be more polite. You mustn't make fun of me.
Here's Judge Hooker, Marjorie.
Oh, hello.
Hello, everybody. How are you?
Dinner will be ready very soon now, Judge.
Really, Marjorie, you folks shouldn't have gone to all this trouble.
No trouble at all, Judge Hooker. We had to eat anyway. By the way, Judge, do you know Oliver Honeywell?
You mean that anemic young calf that hangs around, Marjorie? I've heard about him, but I've never seen him.
Well, take a good look. This is him right here.
Hello? What?
Oh, say, don't mind me. I'm always kidding, Oliver.
That's the trouble.
Everybody's always kidding Oliver.
No, no. My boy, you mustn't get bitter. Say, why is your ear all bandaged up?
Oh, I did this afternoon when I was giving myself a haircut.
You mean to say you cut your own hair?
Yeah, I do it with mirrors.
But what happened this afternoon? Did the bowl slip?
No, no, I was using manicure scissors. I guess I didn't allow for the curve.
Well, your hair looks very pretty with the scalloped edges. Oh, excuse me.
Sure.
Come in.
I'm from the Telegraph Company.
Oh, for goodness sakes, you're too early, boy. Later.
Yeah, but I got a message.
Come back at 10 o'clock now. Beat it before you spoil everything.
Yeah, but...
Wrong address, folks.
Say, Unc, can I give it to him now?
What? Oh, the present for the judge? Why, sure. Let's all give him his presents now.
Happy birthday, Judge Hooker.
For me? Now, I wonder what's inside.
Listen to him. You'd think he was a sweet 16 instead of a sour 60. Go on, unwrap him, Judge.
All right, I will, thank you.
Oh, he's opening yours first, sis.
Yeah.
I hope you like it, Judge.
I'm sure I will. Well, what do you think? A necktie.
What?
Just what I need. Thank you, Marjorie. Now, let's look at the next one. With all best wishes from Oliver Honeywell. Well, Honeywell.
Yeah?
You shouldn't have done this.
Oh. Gee, another necktie.
Yeah, isn't it nice? Yellow one with green polka dots.
You know, I got one just like that for Christmas last year.
And I'll bet that's it.
Well, let's see about this one. Although it is not Christmas Eve, here's a present you will receive from your old friend, Throckmorton Gildersleeve.
Yeah, catch on. It's a poem, Judge.
Another necktie. Purple this time.
Yes, just matches your complexion, Judge.
Thank you. I wonder what's in this package. It's from Leroy, I see.
One guess, Judge Hooker. It's a necktie, all right, but this one's different. It's got a picture of Superman on it.
Yeah. Well, now that the necktie party's over, let's trot into the dining room. Judge, Bertie's fixed a special new dish in your honor.
Is that so? I'm flattered.
I thought you would be.
What do you call it, Gildy?
Calves brains a la Judge Hooker.
No thanks. No more. My, that certainly was a delicious cake and beautiful, too.
Yes. With all those candles lit up, we had enough heat to bake another cake.
Have your fun, Gildersleeve. I'm so full of wonderful food, I don't mind. Oh, that was a marvelous meal. I wish I had a cook like your Bertie.
Well, what happened to your cook, Judge?
I let her go when I found out after fixing dinner for me, she'd go out and have her dinner in a restaurant.
Oh, excuse me. I wonder who that can be. Yes?
I'm from the Telegraph Company.
Not now, I said. Come back at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, but I got a date at 10 o'clock.
Break it.
What was it, Gildy, old man?
Nothing at all, Judgy. Just a boy out looking for the wrong house.
Say, if you don't mind, I'm going into the kitchen and thank Bertie for that wonderful dinner.
Oh, well, don't overpraise her, Judge.
I won't.
Remember, too many compliments spoil the cook. That's true.
Something I can do for you, Your Honor?
No, Bertie, I just wanted to tell you that that dinner you just served was an Epicurean collation.
Is that considered good?
I didn't think it was good. I thought it was a gastronomic achievement.
Oh, you didn't like it.
I did, too. And I consider myself a pretty good judge.
And so do I, and I'll be glad to vote for you. When's the election?
Next spring. No, I mean judge of cooking. Wish you were working for me, Bertie. That Gildersleeve is a mighty lucky dog, but he doesn't really appreciate you.
He don't?
Well, look at the way he makes you wash those dishes, getting your hands all chapped and red.
Well, man, them rubber gloves.
Well, the least he could do is to buy you a nice electrical dishwashing machine. I've got one in my kitchen. Say, you'd have a lot of fun operating it.
Well, I don't know. I may be old-fashioned, but I prefer to dunk the dishes in water instead of electrocuting them.
Great sense of humor you have there, Bertie. By the way, did I ever tell you about the fine big maid's room in my house?
No, sir. Is it pretty?
Is it? It's got everything but Rochester.
Certainly sounds like the elephant's earrings to me.
Yes, and of course, I'm not home more than 3-4 nights a week, so that means my cook has plenty of days off and very little to do. What do you think, Bertie?
Well, I think she's going to make some gal a wonderful employer.
Well, you don't understand. I want you as my cook.
Me? But I've already got a position.
But think what it would mean to your social position among your friends if you were to cook for Horace Hooker.
Yes, sir. That certainly would impress the other members of the mysterious and bewildering orders of the Daughters of Cleopatra, which I is the head sphinx. But, of course, I just couldn't do it.
Why not? Has Gildersleeve got you under contract?
No, sir. I've here strictly on a meal-to-meal basis.
Well, then, where no contractual entailment exists between principal and agent at the time of severance of service, notice of termination is not required, ipso facto.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, that's common law.
Oh, it happens often, huh?
Well, yes. Say, after you left Gildersleeve and come to work for me, you wish that you had left old Stupid Over...
Old Stupid Over what?
I was saying to Bertie that it must be hard working all Stupid Over a hot stove.
Oh, yeah. I see. Well, come on back in the living room. The kids want to play Pin the Tail on the Donkey, and you're going to be the Democrat.
All right, I'm coming. Hi, Bertie, and don't forget what I said.
You mean about the ipso facto?
Yes, yes, and the quicker you ipso, the sooner it'll be a facto. Come on, Gildy, old pal, let's go into the other room.
Yeah, all right, Judge. Now, here he is. Well, children, what should we do?
Well, I think it'll be just dandy if we play Drop the Kleenex.
Yeah. Oliver, don't you mean Drop the Handkerchief?
Well, I figured that the other would be more sanitary.
Yeah.
How about musical chairs or something like that?
Well, I bet I know who that is. Hey, come in.
Mister, this is positively my final appearance. Here's the telegram for you.
Look, it's not for me. It's for this gray-haired gentleman right here.
Oh.
No. Don't hand it to him. Huh? It's supposed to be open. Sung.
Oh, but I don't think...
You're not paid to think. You're paid to sing. I'll break in the song, young man.
Well, okay, but remember, you asked for it. Me, me, me.
Yes, you.
Me. Mr. Throckmorton, T. Gildersleeve, I'm in awful bad jam. Can you send me $50 to bail me out? Sign your brother-in-law, Sam.
What? Old telegram, get out of here.
All right, that's the first portion of The Great Gildersleeve from 1941. More after these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Roger. Appreciate you, my friend. It is 12:40 in the morning here, Lisa. And if our listeners don't already know this, we are here every Saturday and Sunday beginning at 11 p.m., on Saturdays, we go till 2 a.m., playing all your favorite classic radio shows. You name it, we have it here. The Shadow, which we're having tonight when we come back here, we'll play The Shadow. But we're normally here from 11 o'clock till 2 on Saturdays, and Sundays we start same time, 11, and go till 1. Although tonight, when we come back here, actually... we are not going to start at 11 because there is Bears post-game show, right?
Yeah, thank you, Dan Long, for clearing that up for us. We knew we were preempted. It is Bears post-game, so we will only be on for an hour tonight, which is from 12 to 1. So we will still be on for 1 hour.
Yeah, we're going to play The Shadow. We won't play the Dinah Shore show, and I know a lot of people wanted to hear that. I wanted to play it, too.
But we will play it.
But I think if we don't play The Shadow, we'll even make people even more not happy.
And we're sorry. It's 1 hour less, and we can't help it.
We have to do what our superiors tell us to do. We're just,
we're trying to follow directions, and we're not very good at following directions.
Don't get mad at us.
Yeah, we're trying. But we're still going to be here, so that's the good news.
We'll be here at midnight tonight. We'll play The Shadow for you. But right now, it's the conclusion to The Great Gildersleeve.
Gildersleeve Residence.
Good morning, Bertie. This is Judge Hooker. How are you this bright and sunny morning?
Dull and cloudy. I was up all night trying to decide between remaining where I is with the status quo or packing up and moving over to the ipso facto.
I just telephoned to tell you that whatever your salary is now, I'll better it by $10 a month.
$10 a month? Judge, you done just hired yourself a cook.
Fine. How soon can you come to work?
Well, that depends on how soon they let me go.
Well, cook up some excuse to leave quick. Bye.
That's gonna take a mess of doing. Oh, nobody knows the trouble I'm getting into.
Oh, Bertie, is breakfast ready?
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Bertie. You better set another place, Bertie. Oliver invited himself over for breakfast again.
More people to feed. Just working myself to a shadow.
Now, Bertie, can I help it if that biological blunder... come right in, Oliver.
Thanks. Morning, Bertie. Oh, prunes again, huh?
Don't you like the way I fix breakfast?
Of course he does. Oliver, never wrinkle up your nose at a prune.
Morning, everybody. You too, Oliver. Say, what is this? Prunes again?
Now, if you don't like it...
Yes. Leroy, sit down and pass the toast.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Where's Marjorie? Isn't she... Oh, darn this toast.
What's wrong with that toast?
It just went down the wrong way.
Oh, you don't like it. And after I worked my fingers to the bone, scraping it off for you.
But all I said was wrong way.
Oh, now I'm doing things the wrong way. Teaching me my business. I'm tired of not being appreciated around here. I was resigning. There's other people who like my cookery.
Well, Bertie seems to be a little twittery this morning.
Gee, she never acted this way before.
You think she means that about resigning?
Say, I better find out what's wrong. Now, Bertie, I don't understand what... Bertie, where are you? Oh, Bertie! Oh, Bertie!
Oh, Bertie!
Oh, Bertie!
Oh, my goodness, Bertie has flown the coop. Come, come. Wake up, Leroy. It's time to go to school, young man.
Just give me another 15 minutes, Bertie. Yep.
This isn't Bertie. It's Uncle Mort. I just haven't shaved yet.
Oh. Hi, Unc. Where's Bertie? Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah. Wake up, young man. Look at the clock. Do you want to be tardy?
It's okay with me.
You... Come on, Leroy. Wake up. Oliver's fixing some nice hot mush for breakfast.
Oh, just let me sleep 10 minutes more.
I can't, Leroy. By George, I'm going to pull the covers off of you.
Oh, no, don't do that. I'll get up.
Yeah.
Say, where's Marjorie?
She's downtown interviewing cooks at employment agencies.
Mr. Gildersleeve, help me quick.
Oh, Oliver's in trouble in the kitchen. Get up, Leroy. Coming, Oliver. Yes. Now, what's the trouble?
Well, it's the mush I'm fixing for breakfast. It keeps overflowing. I filled 4 pots already. Now I need another one.
Oh. Well, here's a double boiler, Oliver. Now keep stirring or it'll start burning.
Gee whiz, I never knew mush multiplied like this. Just seems to go on and on and on.
It's a morning cereal, isn't it? Oh, jumping jelly beans. What is it now? Oh, good morning, mailman.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Gildersleeve. I've got a postage due letter here. It's 3 cents, please.
Surely. 3 cents.
Yeah.
Here you are.
Oh, thank you.
Say, this letter is for Bertie Lee Coggins. She doesn't work here anymore.
Oh, yes. That's your cook. Say, I've got a change of address for her. Better give me that letter back.
Certainly. Oh, by the way, what is her new address, if it isn't violating any professional secrets?
Oh, it's 2100 Burnside.
2100 Burnside. Thank you very much. 21... That address sounds familiar to me. Where have I heard it before? 2100 Burnside. Why, of course. Leroy!
Yeah?
Oliver! Mm-hmm. I know who hired Bertie away from us.
You know?
Yes, I should have guessed it before. It was the judge.
No!
Yes, that crook of a hooker hooked our cook. Wait till I lay my hands on him. He stole our Bertie, the horse thief. At last, hooker. I finally tracked you down.
What do you mean, track me down? I'm always in my chambers this time of day. What do you want with me?
Why, you oily worm, you got our Bertie. And we want her back.
Nothing doing. Now get out.
Oh, that does it. I'm going to create a vacancy on the Superior Court bench.
So put down those bookends.
I will not. Stand still, you old goat, so I can hit you.
Now stay where you are, Gildersleeve, or I'll press this buzzer.
I won't stay where I am. I'm going to knock you. What happens when you press the buzzer?
My bailiff will come in and drag you down to jail.
Yeah, it's a frame-up. That's what it is. First you steal my cook, then you upset our whole household, and now you're going to railroad me to the caboose.
Uh-huh. So the big balloon's losing all its hot air. Your threats didn't work, Gildersleeve. You're a beaten man.
You don't have to rub it in, you judicial Judas. I know when I'm licked. We can't find anybody to do Bertie's work. We can't find where she puts anything. We haven't had a decent meal since he left.
You haven't? Oh, that's too bad. Well, I don't want to be too hard on you. So, if you promise to behave yourself, maybe I'll invite you over to the house for dinner sometime.
I wouldn't sit down at the same table and eat a meal with you, Hooker, if I were starving. What am I talking about? If I were starving, I am starving.
I knew that your stomach was bigger than your stubbornness. You can come to dinner tomorrow night if you want to.
I don't want to. I wouldn't humiliate myself to the extent of what time tomorrow night?
7 o'clock. And don't forget to bring Marjorie and Leroy.
Of course I won't forget. But that's the only reason I'm coming. I'm just doing it for the kiddies.
Now, remember, Uncle Mort, if this scheme is to work, you've got to keep a tight control over your temper.
Who, me? I never lose my temper.
And Leroy, now, don't overdo the business of being sassy.
Oh, don't worry, sis. I'm a born actor.
Well, I guess we're all ready. Gee, we surely look like tramps, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and ring the bell, Uncle.
Yeah, all right, all right.
Now, on your guard, everybody. Here she comes.
Yeah.
Oh, hello, Miss Marge.
Hello.
Hello, Leroy.
Hello, Bertie.
Good evening, Mr. Gillsleeve.
Good evening.
Won't y'all kindly come in and rest your hats and coats? They look kind of tired.
Yes, of course. Come on in, children.
Well, well, come right in.
Oh, hello, Judge Hooker. So sweet of you to invite us. You have no idea how we're going to enjoy this.
Hiya, Hooker. How's the cooker?
Leroy, don't you talk that away.
Oh, hooey fooey. You can't boss me anymore, Bertie.
Leroy, behave yourself. Oh, I just can't imagine what's gotten into you lately. You used to be such a little gentleman.
Oh, who wants to be a gentleman? I'm going to be a heavyweight prize fighter and chew tobacco.
You ain't going to be no prize fighter long if somebody hits you smack on that chew of tobacco. And look at your hair. Somebody must have been trimming it with hedge clippers.
Nope. Oliver showed me how to cut it all by myself.
You never did these fumadiddles when I was there. Why?
Bertie, isn't dinner ready?
Yes, sir. Well, when you needed a haircut...
Then serve the first course, please.
It's sitting on the table.
Oh, shall we go in now?
Yes, sir. Come on, Leroy. Come on, Marjorie. Okay, I'm starved to death.
Yes. Well, how do you think everything looks?
Oh, just splendid. Except for Bertie.
What's wrong with Bertie?
Well, I think she must be worrying. Got dark circles under her eyes.
Nonsense. Incidentally, you shouldn't talk coming here without a shave.
Oh, yes, that reminds me. Bertie, where did you hide my good razor? I've looked high and low for it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Gillsleeve. It's out on the back porch. I used to carry it with me when I went out in the backyard at night. Sort of discourage, you know, late visitors.
Bertie, isn't it time to bring the soup?
It's right here. Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve, I fixed a special turtle soup for you. I know it's your favorite.
Well, thank you. It's a darn expensive to make. We don't have it very often. But I'll come over here every day if you'll cook it for me, Bertie.
Oh, I'll be glad
but,
to.
Splendid. You mind if I bring over Oliver? He just loves turtle soup, Bertie.
Uh-huh. Well, you're invited, Gildy.
Yeah.
Boy, this soup is super.
No matter how you like it, Leroy, you just eat it. Don't kiss it.
Leroy isn't your responsibility anymore, Bertie.
Yes, the judge is right, Bertie.
But I know how to handle him. You just send him over here.
Bertie, pay attention to your work.
That's just what I'm doing. Oh, Miss Marge, that bandage. You done cut your finger.
No, Bertie, I burned it. Well, ironing.
Oh, honey, how many times have I told you ain't got no knack for ironing?
Somebody's got to do it. And we haven't found anyone else yet.
Then I'll come over tomorrow afternoon and do it for you.
Now, wait a minute, Bertie. You're working for me. You can't do that.
Oh, yes, I can. I got 3 afternoons off every week, and if I wants to spend a mining for Miss Marge, nothing in the world can stop me. Ipso facto, habeas corpus, or post-mortem.
I tell you, I won't stand for it. As long as you're working for me, you can't spend all your time straightening out Gildersleeve's messes.
Why, George, I can straighten out my own messes, you little...
Oh, Uncle, remember now, you mustn't.
Oh, yes. Excuse me, Judgy, what were you saying?
I was just telling Bertie to quit acting like one of your family.
Well, I've been a member of that family so long, I just can't up and quit all at once.
Don't be foolish. Here you have all the extra time in the world.
That's just the trouble. Nobody to cook for, except one dyspeptic that eats itty-bitty dabs. There's no big parties with lots of work like over at Mr. Gillsleeve's.
Well, I must say that that is what...
And when I see that Leroy, who I practically raised myself, acting so fresh because he needs a guiding hand to slap him down once in a while. Well, I just don't like this job, Judge. And if I thought Miss Marge would have me back again, I'd go right upstairs and pack my bag.
What? Why, you ungrateful...
Bertie, we'd be very happy to have you come back.
Okay, I was resigning, Judge.
But you can't do that. You haven't given me any notice.
I don't need to. Where there's no contractual entailment exists between the principal and the agent at the time of severance of service, notice of termination is not required, ipso facto.
Oh, what's the use?
I'll get my things, and I'll be waiting out in the car when y'all get ready. Goodbye, Judge.
Bye. Oh, it's a fine mess, and I have a sneaking suspicion regarding how it all came about, too.
Why, Judgy, what are you hinting at?
Never mind. Oh, whatever are we going to do about this dinner?
Well, if you want to come over to our house, our Bertie will be glad to fix us up some ham and eggs, Judge.
No thanks, you sneak in the grass.
Look who's calling who a what and a where. Come on, children. I won't let you remain in this atmosphere a moment longer.
That suits me fine.
Yes. But there's just one thing I've got to do before I go, Hooker.
Let go of me. Get off of me. Help. He's choking me to death.
What?
Uncle, don't choke him. Now you mustn't.
I'm not choking the little pipsqueak. I'm just taking back the necktie I gave him for his birthday. Come on, children.
Did I do my part all right, Uncle?
Oh, you were perfect, my boy. You were a regular dead-end kid.
This bandage on my finger bothers me. Can I take it off now?
No, no, no. Keep it on for at least another day or so, Marjorie. Or else Bertie might get wise that this was all a put-up. Ah, Bertie, there you are.
Yes, sir, Mr. Gillsleeve.
Are you all ready to come home with us now, Bertie?
Yes, sir. That was mighty cute the way y'all pretended things were wrong at home. Of course, it didn't fool me a bit.
What? We didn't? Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my, it sure is good to be back in my own kitchen again.
Well, we're glad to have you back, Bertie.
Well, there's one thing that sure was a surprise.
What's that?
I expected to find the sink piled high with dirty dishes and ain't a single one.
No, we've been using paper plates.
Yeah, we broke all the dishes.
Yeah. Good night.
Original music heard on this program was composed and conducted by William Randall. This is Jim Bannon speaking for the Kraft Cheese Company and inviting you to be with us again next week at this same time for the further adventures of the great Gildersleeve. And reminding you that America's first line of defense is you and your support. So invest to the best of your ability in defense savings bonds. Good night. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the great Gildersleeve early broadcast, November 9th, 1941, where Bertie is considering leaving Gildersleeve. Hal Perry, sponsored by Kraft, is heard on NBC. Walter Tetley in that cast as well. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. Well, Lisa, we've had quite a few people text in and say, oh, man, you're not playing the Dinah Shore show. Well, we can't because we're only going to be on an hour tonight. When we come back here at 11 p.m., we are being bumped an hour because of Bears. But it's their first game of the season, so it's a big game. And I think the Bears are going to be really good this year, Lisa.
You know, obviously we come at it from our own point of view, and we'd prefer to be here.
Now, that's football. That's football, right? Is that the oblong ball?
That's what they say.
Or is that it's round or it's oblong?
It's an oblong ball.
It depends on your point of view.
That is true.
What's it made out of? Calfskin, pigskin? What's it made?
I don't know.
Same thing, right? No, it's different. Calfskin or pigskin, Roger?
Pig skin.
Yeah, it's a pig.
Okay.
We're sorry that we're giving up the hour, but, you know, we're following the rules here, and I don't think they'd like it if we were here at the same time.
I mean,
somehow.
Lisa's a scofflaw, but not me.
Right.
I follow the rules.
Yes, you do.
Lisa,
you...
no.
No.
She never does.
No, I'm really a
rebel.
They
say, all right, Lisa, do
a
this, and she's like,
hurts.
I think I'll just do the opposite of that.
I do that sometimes, but only with you.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
1:09 in the morning. Thank you, Roger, and welcome to Hour 3 of the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you for staying up late with us. Lisa has not fallen asleep yet.
But Carl has.
So I actually...
Shantae can vouch for that
I went and I took a little, you know, during the Gildersleeve show there, I went in there and just checked out how comfy the couch is. You
we
know,
have
the
some
comfy
great
couch.
Furniture here.
And... Shantae said, Carl, you have a minute left. And I heard myself snore. And I asked Shantae, did I snore just now? She said, a little. she's so nice.
It's Shantae, like either you do or you don't. I'm going to go with you do.
Shantae is so sweet. And she's like, yeah, a little.
She's just being nice. She meant a lot.
She is nice.
You know, the seismic meter in here kind of went off. That must have been it.
The seismogram. The snormogram.
You can hear it down in the newsroom.
I know. So, but Lisa has not fallen asleep yet. So, congratulations, Lisa.
Well, gee, thanks, Carl.
You know, I'm usually in bed by 11.
Yeah. Well, I don't really go to bed that early, so I'm a little bit of a night owl.
Are you?
Yeah, so this job is perfect for me. One night. The second night's a little more difficult.
Well, in this hour, we're going to tune into a good detective drama on Crime and Peter Chambers that stars Dane Clark. Dane Clark was kind of a tough guy in the movies and things, and NBC Radio said, hey, let's give him a detective series. It came a little late. Radio shows were kind of on their way out, but I think this ran a couple seasons. We have a 1954 broadcast coming your way in just a few minutes. But first, we're going to play our game, Cat's Pride. Crack the quote, because Cat's Pride is our main sponsor here on the WGN Radio Theater. What's the movie?
I think there's never been an easier one than I've got right now.
Wizard of Oz?
So I think even Roger's got this one.
What?
It's Jaws.
Oh, yeah.
But this is...
I got this.
Yeah, you do.
100%.
Even Roger's going to be on with this one.
Boom,
so
boom,
I think
boom,
we're good.
Boom, 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 boom. Ba-da-da-da!
Did you see?
We're just going to do that all night long.
Yeah, that's okay. This is a good one.
Yeah, so, all right. What do they win?
They're going to win two tickets to see Ghost the Musical at Theater at the Center in Munster, Indiana. And what caller do we want? I think we're going to go with caller 5.
Caller 5.
Call now, 312-981-7200.
All right, call us, play the game live on the air. It's Jaws. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote. Brought to you by Cat's Pride.
And we have Ann on the line. Hi, Ann.
Hey.
I'm glad you made it through.
I am, too.
Good.
Hi, Ann.
This is a little bit of Jaws from 1975. I can't believe it's that long since Jaws.
1975.
Right? Didn't you see the Meg, like the new?
Yeah,
the
I did.
New,
You know, Ann, this is a true story. We had a pool, like a 5-foot above-ground pool growing up. And I saw this movie, Jaws, at the theater, and I swear to you, it took me a long, long time before I went
back into
in
the
that
pool.
I'm not kidding you. I would not go back. Let's see, 1975, I was born
you
in 63, so
12.
I was 12 years old. I did not want to swim in that pool.
I wouldn't want to swim in a pool
maybe
with
like,
you either.
I thought maybe a helicopter could drop a shark into the pool.
It could.
And that's what I was thinking. I'm like, I'm not going in that pool anymore.
I don't blame you.
You know, that happens so often in those days.
Yes, I know. There was a wave of that happening.
Yeah.
There was a rash of sharks being thrown into pools.
And there's so many movies that really exemplify that it scares you probably without good reason. But now we're all a little bit scared.
That movie scared the you-know-what out of me.
You were a bright little boy, weren't you?
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but I didn't want to swim in the pool after seeing Jaws for a long, long time. Taking a bath, I was okay with that, but not taking a swim
got,
in the pool.
But you got over it eventually?
I did.
Okay, good. All right, hey, Roger?
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the famous line from Jaws? Because that's our number one.
That, oh, you're going to need a bigger boat.
All right. It's either that or we're in the same boat now, or well, do you know how to build a boat?
I wonder which one I'm going to choose.
What do you think,
well,
Ann?
Let's ask Ann what she thinks.
I think we're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah,
we are.
I think Roger's got this one down. Let's hear it.
Where's the clip? We have the clip.
We do.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
And there it is. I could not do anything
Lisa,
other than that.
Come on. You couldn't come up with a better clip
No,
than
I
that.
Could not, actually. That is the clip from Jaws. Are you being serious? I can't tell right now.
Yeah, you couldn't come up with some other clip.
What's than better than that?
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, ugh.
Are you kidding me?
No.
There's nothing better than that.
Well,
that is
you know
iconic.
What, you know what matters?
What?
Anne won.
Yes, she
won.
Did. You should
so
go
much.
Back to sleep, Carl.
Ann, what did Ann win?
Ann, you've got two tickets to
go back to sleep.
You've got two tickets to Ghost the Musical. It is playing through October 14th at Theater at the Center, which is in Munster, Indiana. For tickets, you can call the box office 219-836-3255, or better yet, go online to theateratthecenter.com. Congratulations. You're going to love the show. It is based on the 1990 film, which is really neat.
Enjoy it, Ann.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for calling in. It's great.
Way
to
go, Ann, with probably the easiest game we've ever had, thanks to the Lisa picking the that's like picking from Terminator. I'll be back.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Did you know this is a true story, Roger? Did you know this? One time, you know, when Steven Spielberg was putting this whole movie together, you know, he was the director, and he was trying to cast. He was having a lot of problems casting roles in this movie, especially for Quint, you know, the shark hunter. He had a lot.
Right.
He wanted Charles Coburn. That's who he really wanted for it. And Coburn was like, I'm golfing. I don't really want to do that movie about a mechanical shark in the water and things.
Mm-hmm.
He was having a lot of problems. And so he couldn't find the guy to play Brody either. He happened to be at a Hollywood party, just like, you know, someone was throwing a party at their house.
Mm-hmm.
And Roy Scheider was there. And he started talking to Steven Spielberg. And Spielberg was not like a big director at this time.
Right, he was fairly fresh.
Exactly. Not unlike the fish in the movie. And so he was talking to Roy, and he's telling him about this movie. And he's like, you know, and I'm having such trouble finding a guy to play this character who doesn't like the water and this and that. And Roy Scheider says, hey, you know, I'm an actor. What about me? You know, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he got the role.
You know, timing is everything, right?
Yeah, that's how he got the role.
That's how I got this role.
That's true. Lisa auditioned for my Twilight Zone radio dramas.
And he says, hey, I'm doing this. I'm going to start this radio show. And I said, well, hey.
Hey, I like
hey,
radio.
Hey, I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know how I got this role?
Huh.
I ordered a salad.
Yeah. And they gave you the role.
It was a Kaiser.
It's all about the right time at the right place.
All right. Well, enough of that. We have to play a classic radio show, but that's a good one, Roger. Hang on a second. Say it again.
Oh, no.
Say it one more time.
It only works
you know how
once.
I got this role?
How'd you get this role?
I ordered the salad.
Very good, Roger.
It was
Roger.
Funny the first time, though.
All right. Crime and Peter Chambers, a detective series, came to radio for one season in 1954. It starred Dane Clark. He was a New York-based detective who worked alongside the police. Bill Zuckert, who I had an opportunity to interview one time, was Clark's best friend, Lieutenant Lewis Parker. And it had top New York supporting actors as the characters in this. Roger DeCoven, Leanne Chaney, Leslie Woods, Lawson Zerbe. Fred Collins did the announcing. This is an episode from April 13th, 1954. It's called Charles Avon, Druggist. Here's Dane Clark in part one of Crime and Peter Chambers.
Crime and Peter Chambers. Created by Henry Kane, transcribed and starring Dane Clark. A private investigator, duly licensed and duly sworn. Peter Chambers.
You're a private
private eye. That's your business. Anything else? That's for laughs. The guy on the customer's end of your office desk? No laughs here. This one is strictly business. He's a round little man, balding on top, pudgy in the middle. He's got eyes like a vulture and a cranky voice.
Mr. Chambers, you've been highly recommended to me. You're supposed to be number one in your racket.
He chuckles with a phony heartiness, and the eyes crinkle up, vulture's eyes, with an extra set of bags under them. The upper set are dark bulbous circles from lack of sleep. The lower set are worry bags, purple and networked with wrinkles.
I'm out on a writ of habeas corpus, Mr. Chambers.
Yeah, and on a murder rap.
They haven't got a thing
now,
on
me.
Now,
just a minute, pal. Let's get some of our facts ironed out. Your name is Charles Avon.
Uh-huh.
You're a druggist here in New York.
Right.
You're married, and you've got no kids.
Correct. Wife's name is Nancy. Lives 1688 Gramercy Park North.
All right, now let's get to the meaty part. You're accused of the murder of one Alan Lewis.
Yeah.
Used to be a clerk in your drugstore.
That's right.
Police claim you killed him Monday, which is yesterday, yesterday evening, at his Park Avenue.
Yeah, so they claim.
Well, did you kill him, Mr. Avon?
Absolutely not.
And my job?
Is to find out who did kill him, so that I don't have to carry that burden around, too.
What's the other burden, Mr. Avon?
Well, there are two sides to every question in my business. I don't.
All right, we'll skip that temporarily. Now, let's see. The cops hauled you in for the murder of your clerk.
Ex-clerk. He hadn't been working for me for a year. Living off the fat of the land.
Why'd they pick on you, Miss Avon?
Because I was supposed to be there last night at 8 o'clock. That's when it happened to him. And also, I'm supposed to have a motive for his murder.
Well, did you have a motive?
Well, if a guy's been blackmailing you for a year...
Blackmail? What do you have on you, Mr. Avon?
Well, now, I don't know that I...
Ma, let's have it.
Well, narcotics.
Narcotics?
We had a deal going, sort of, with the narcotics. The lawyer knows all about it.
I want to know.
Well, I was looking for easy money, and I'm doing all right. This Alan Lewis, he learns about it. He was working for me, you understand, and he starts holding me up.
And so last night, when he's murdered...
I came there to talk with him, but he wasn't home. That's all, he wasn't home. Then last night, the police picked me up, and I don't even know what they're talking about.
Who's your lawyer?
Richard Evans. Dick Evans. Oh. You know him?
Yeah, I know Dick.
Mr. Chambers, you've got to help me out of this jam.
Not the narcotics, pal.
No, the murder.
And it'll cost you 5,000 simoleons.
Mm. That's fair enough.
Cash on the barrel head. I don't trust guys like you.
Okay, but I don't have it on me. If you'll accompany me to the bank,
I can't say I admire my choice of companion.
You're an insulting
Let's
one,
Let's go,
aren't you?
Mr. Avon. We'll discuss it on the way. You get to the bank and you're paid, and you kiss him off like you'd kiss off a king cobra that just became a client. But if the guy's not guilty of murder, it's your job to prove it. That's what you're being paid for. So you get rid of him, and you go downtown to the offices of B. Richard Evans, Regal Legal Eagle. Hi, honey. Mr. Evans in?
All right, Pete. Come on. I've been expecting you.
Hi, Dick. How are things going?
Fine, Pete. Come right on in.
Okay. Dick Evans, boy lawyer. Black hair, beak nose, and cyclone cellar voice. A two-tone personality split at 5 o'clock. Tricky as a slippery bath mat before the deadline, but afterward, wide open and roaring. A wielder of martinis, like a good farmer with a pitchfork.
What brings you, Mr. Detective?
Charles Avon, Dick. How easy was it getting him out on that writ?
Easier than getting stepped on in the subway.
Because why, Counselor?
Because the prosecution doesn't have a thing on
it. Well, they got motive.
Motive isn't murder, Mr. Chambers.
Well, how'd that guy get it, that Alan Lewis?
Two bullets. One ripped through his right shoulder, rather unimportant. The second one pasted in over his right eye. Very important.
Prosecution got the gun?
No, sir, they don't. All they got is motive, period. They gave him a 9-hour grilling, and all they could come up with was motive.
Okay. Now, what about the other charge?
What other charge?
The narcotics.
Well, I'm going to plead him guilty on that. He ought to get a light sentence because without Alan Lewis, they've hardly got a case.
Well, here comes motive again for the death of Alan Lewis.
Well, the police know all about that. How much good has it done them?
By the way, how do they know? Who told them?
Frankie Tokers.
Frankie Tokers. Male or female?
Female, but good and female. You're going to like that when you come to it.
I like it already, just from looking at your face.
Have another slice of motive, Mr. Chambers. This one's on Frankie. She was engaged to Alan Lewis.
That's motive?
Not yet, it's not, but this is. She's the beneficiary on his insurance policy for $30,000. Plus, she's the one who informed the police that the Lewis boy was putting the touch on Avon for the blackmail.
Well, how'd she know?
Her boyfriend confided in her.
Oh. Well, how's she stand suspect-wise?
Oh, she's got an alibi, don't they all?
Frankie told me.
A very gorgeous number. It sings at the Rumpus Room with an equally gorgeous blonde partner with whom you will kindly have no truck.
Why?
Because that one is sort of reserved for me.
Do you have this Frankie Toker's phone number, Dick?
Got it written down somewhere. Name, address, and phone number. Ah, here you are.
Thanks.
Yeah. Cute little trick. That's Frankie.
Hello?
Miss Toker's?
This is Miss Toker's.
Collins from the insurance company. There's been a slight complication. May I come to see you?
Well, when?
Oh, right away. The sooner the better.
Well, all right, if you insist. I should be here most of the afternoon.
Ah, good. I'll see you shortly, then. Bye, Miss Toker's. So you leave the lawyer and you go visit the lady. This is supposed to be the part the private eye enjoys, but don't make book on that. Because most of the dear ladies turn out to look like bats on a vacation from the Belfry. This one happily doesn't. Miss Toker's?
Yes, I'm Miss Toker.
Mr. Collins from the insurance company.
Oh, yes. Please come in.
Frankie Toker's. She's wearing a hostess gown, a metallic number in gold. Imagine that wrapped around a dream-bunched figure. Frankie Toker's. Tall, with an oval face and wide, dark eyes that glint like brandy bottles under bar lights. You don't fool around with a kid like that.
Mr. Collins?
I'm sorry. My name's not Collins, Miss Toker's, and I'm not from the insurance company. My name's Chambers, Peter Chambers. I'm a private detective. And they tell me that you're on a spot.
Get out.
Now, just a minute.
Get out, I tell you.
Look, lady, I think you've got me pegged wrong.
Please.
You explain the situation, and tears come up in the blackberry brandy eyes. Naturally, you put your arm around her. Just as naturally, she puts her head on your shoulder. A sobbing brunette close in the arms of the private detective. There you have the classic situation. But you've been paid $5,000 to find out who killed Cock Robin, so reluctantly you break it up. No. I know how you feel, Miss Toker's. You love the guy, but he's dead.
Not true.
Huh?
I hated him.
You were engaged to be married, weren't you?
That was going to end when I found out what he was really like.
And whose idea was that $30,000 life policy with you as beneficiary?
His, of course. But that was going to be finished, too.
Hmm.
Mr. Chambers, I couldn't tell the police, but I will tell you.
Why?
Because I want you to help me.
Look, sister, you didn't kill him, did you?
No. Listen, last night, the night he was killed, I went there. I was going to tell him off and finish it off completely.
What time?
9:00. It was between shows. I'm a singer at the Rumpus Room.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, when I got there, there was no answer. I kept ringing, but there was no answer, and I was worried. I went back to the club, and I called on the phone. No answer. Then I called the police and told them that there was trouble there. I didn't say who was calling.
Hold up just for a minute. First, why the police, just because the guy's not home? And second, how did you know there was trouble there?
Because I knew that he had an appointment with Mr. Charles Avon for 8:00, and it was going to be a long talk. And I knew what the talk was about.
Well, what was it about?
About more money. More blackmail money.
Oh, I see. It figured for a trouble party, huh?
Yes.
And when the guy didn't answer at 9:00, was your idea that the trouble had exploded?
Exactly. And 1 hour after the phone call, the police were at the club, investigating the murder of Alan Lewis. I told them everything I knew about the narcotics that Mr. Avon was dealing in and about Alan's blackmail and about how he was going to raise the ante at this meeting between them.
Well, it answers why Charles Avon was picked up. What about your alibi?
I fixed that up with my singing partner. I arranged for her to say that I'd been with her all the time. In our dressing room. But I'm scared, Mr. Chambers. I'm sick scared inside of me. Help me. Please help me.
Oh, Miss Toker's, I'd hate it if you did put those slugs into Alan.
I didn't. Oh, I didn't.
I believe her. I don't think she did. Did you hear how she was very convincing?
She was.
She said, I didn't, Mr.
Although if you kind of cry, does it seem more convincing?
I didn't.
Does that help to convince you?
I didn't plug that guy. I didn't do it.
Does the crying help?
Yeah, that's Leslie Woods actually there. That was Mary Wesley on Boston Blackie. That's the same actress, Leslie Woods, in this broadcast. Yeah, I believe her.
Well, then
I'm a sucker for a pretty girl.
You're a sucker I was going to say a girl.
I got a bridge in Brooklyn for sale.
Are you
How
a pretty
much?
Girl?
How much is it?
Special this week, $1.99.
Really? I can afford that.
Yeah? Okay.
I can afford that. All right, let's take a quick break. Then we'll get back to crime and Peter Chambers. Stick around. I'm going to run for mayor. Roger, would you vote for me? I'm running for mayor.
You're running?
Yes, I'm going to officially...
Mayor of Chicago?
Let me say it again. Yeah. I am going to run for mayor of Chicago. What
and
do you think of
what
that?
Year are we talking?
Next year, because Rahm is not...
I know that.
Rahm Emanuel is not running,
no,
so
I know.
I am going to throw my hat into the ring there. How many votes do you think I'd get?
It depends how big your hat is.
Pretty big.
Well, his hat is very big, so the hat's even bigger.
10-gallon hat.
And if you're running, I'll work the
Can I just tell you something?
Please do.
Don't make it political, whatever
they make
you say.
Me mayor?
Yeah, we're
big
all in
big changes.
Yeah.
Big.
And let's leave it at that.
I'm talking like radical changes.
Yeah?
Oh, I'd get some stuff done.
Don't ask him what the changes
are. I'm not
going to. Here's one change he's got to make, though.
The news.
One, no.
Be on time?
No. You got to move into the city.
I will. I'll move into the city. If they give me the job of mayor, I'll move into the city of Chicago.
You got to move in first before you can.
All right, then I'll do that.
Okay.
I'll do whatever it takes.
All right.
I will make some big, big changes.
Yeah. Shante, mark the tape.
All right.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah.
A lot of texts. People said they want me to run.
Yeah, but in what direction?
Hello. They want me to run. They want me to run as mayor of.
I think I
might throw the hat in.
I think.
Politics is in my future.
Lisa's got some pictures of you in your running jogging outfit.
Yeah,
and I think that should be the picture on your poster.
Hey,
yeah, I hit delete. Yeah.
Listen, Roger.
Yeah,
you know one of the greatest presidents we ever had, Ronald Reagan.
Okay,
and he was an actor.
Yes,
you know that he was an actor,
and
not exactly a great actor. He was like sort of a B actor, but he was an A-list president. I'll tell you that.
There you go.
And so. I'm not even a B-list actor or I'm probably a D-list radio announcer.
No,
hey, you know what?
Wait a second.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Reagan was also a radio announcer.
That's true. Did you know that he used to broadcast baseball games without being at the baseball park?
Yes, I did know that.
Yeah.
They would say to him, someone would relay to him, oh, it's a hit. You know,
there would be a teletype, not a teletype,
but a
ticker tape.
Yeah.
You know, someone at the park would type
and
in
he would be
what
like,
just happened.
A hit by so and so.
And he would hit, if it was a hit, he'd slap two sticks together
and
then play a recording of
Amazing.
A crowd sound. Yeah.
Well,
how did we jump from mayoral candidate
hang
to
on.
President?
I'm going to make
he's making
I'm
a point.
I'm making a point, Lisa Wolf.
It's going
like a
on.
Pencil. Yeah. He's making a point.
I'm making a point. The point is Ronald Reagan, who was one of the greatest presidents we've ever had, was a radio announcer and an actor, and then he got into politics, became governor of California, became president of the United States.
Therefore,
I think I have a shot.
This is a long stretch.
At mayor.
Oh boy,
what do you think?
Like
mayor of Chicago.
Band. Huh?
Oh, you got
mayor
it.
Of Chicago.
Yeah. Why don't you try
text
running
this,
for...
Text in if you think that I would be a good mayor.
Why don't you try running for governor of California first, and then we'll see.
No, California's too messed up. I couldn't help California, sorry. California's absolutely way too messed
all
up.
All right, well, we'll see.
But
how about
I
run for dog catcher first? How about water commissioner?
Yeah, the water commissioner.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then you can make that funny laugh.
Well, maybe the guy or girl who is the water commissioner isn't resigning.
Yeah, but if there's a new mayor going to come in and they get to appoint whomever they want.
Yeah.
So you could get
no,
buddy,
I want
buddy
the,
with,
I want the big job.
You want
I want the,
big the
mayor job.
Right.
Yeah, I will turn this all around. Let me
you
tell
do
you.
Know that
I will
great
turn
powers
well, it's been
comes
great working
great responsibility.
With you, Carl.
I will. I'm ready for the challenge.
But are we ready? Okay.
No.
Okay.
You're not.
Anywho.
But are you ready for the conclusion to Crime and
yes,
Peter
please.
Chambers?
Ooh, yes, we are.
All right. Here it is. Crime and Peter Chambers.
She's asking for it. And you answer. You take her face in your hands, put your lips on hers, and you leave them there. With excellent results. But then you quit. You crash out of there, and you're heading for police headquarters. But you detour for Charles Avon's drugstore.
Good to see you again, Mr. Chambers.
I was thinking I might want to drop into your home tonight. Would you be there perhaps later on?
No, but my wife will. Oh, you don't know her. Oh, she's here right now. I'd very much like to have you meet her. Nancy?
Yes?
My dear, Peter Chambers, the gentleman I told you about. My wife, Nancy Avon.
She's a small blonde, too young and too pretty for Charlie Boy. She's wearing gold-rimmed black lens goggles and you can't see her eyes. She's smooth-skinned and good-looking. But jumpy, nervous as a lion tame who's lost his whip.
Did you wish to speak to me, Mr. Chambers?
Very much, but I don't have the time now. May I speak with you later?
Of course, but I'm leaving for home now.
Well, may I call you there?
Well, it's a little upset. It's May's day off, but if you wish...
I wish. See you later. Bye, Mr. and Mrs. Avon. And so you're riding your broom again, making time for police headquarters, and then you're there.
Come in. Well, Pete, what do I owe the honor?
Charles Avon, Louis, a paid-up client.
So, maybe you think you can do more than cops can do.
I doubt it, but I can try. Detective Lieutenant Louis Parker, homicide. Thick set and sturdy like a brand-new refrigerator and just about as enthusiastic. But a good cop, and mostly a good friend.
What's pitch?
I'm being paid $5,000 to find out who put the chill on Alan Lewis.
Well, $5,000 to do what we'd do anyway, huh? Brother, yours is one business. Hmm. Okay, what do you want?
Help.
That's hot. You're getting 5 G's. What do we get?
Well, any information happens to fall my way, and no byline, you get all the credit. You buying?
What do you want, kid?
Well, I'd like to see the inside of Alan Lewis's apartment.
I'll buy that. In fact, I'll go with you. You
got a cop staked out there?
Nobody's staked out there. I've got better things to do with cops than having them sitting around getting fat. Okay, what else?
Well, anything else that's not too terribly confidential?
Not this case, Petey. We got us a nice fat group of nothing.
Well, then that's it, Lieutenant. Let us go look at apartments. Alan Lewis's joint turns out to be the usual bachelor's flat fitted out to please the ladies. Parker snoozes in the bedroom while you poke around like a critical matron seeking dust in the upholstery. In the library, a book sticks out like a sore thumb in a working pickpocket. You pull it out, and an envelope drifts to the floor. You pick that up and examine it. It's slid on top, and it contains a letter. It's addressed to Mrs. Nancy Avon, 1688 Gramercy Park, North New York City. You don't stop to read the letter. You stick it in your pocket, and you're ready to leave. Then Parker comes into the room, yawning.
You finished, Sherlock?
All done. Let's get out of here. By the way, I assume you guys gave this place a going over.
Yeah, most of last night. Been through this apartment with a fine-tooth comb.
Yeah, a fine-tooth comb.
Hey, is that a crack?
No crack intended, Lieutenant. Leave us leave.
Yeah, leave us.
Outside, Parker goes off and you're left alone. Frankie Toker's place is nearby and... Well, maybe you're looking for an excuse to go back.
Hello, Mr. Chambers.
Oh, may I come in?
Please do.
You bring her up to date, you take the letter out of the envelope, and you read. Dear Nancy, finished is finished. Now you've got it in writing. I don't see the sense, but if you insist, you can come over Monday at 7:30. You can't stay long. As it happens, I have a date with Charles for 8 o'clock. Yours, Alan.
The date matches. Monday. Yesterday.
The night he was killed.
That letter puts her right in the middle, doesn't it?
Say, do you know anything about these two, Nancy Avon and Alan Lewis?
She was sweet on him, and he encouraged her.
Oh?
Charlie Avon didn't even know it was cooking, but she was planning to divorce him. And then Alan Lewis cooled off.
You mean, when he met you?
He'd have cooled off anyway. That's the kind of guy he was. Real loyal. Shot through with integrity.
Well, how'd she take it, you know?
He told me. She was plenty worked up over it.
Okay, Miss Tokers. Frankie.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you cross your fingers, and if I'm lucky, you're out of a jam.
Oh, I'd appreciate that. Would I appreciate that?
You figure your next stop for your last stop. 1688 Gramercy Park North.
Oh. Oh, Mr. Chambers. Please come in.
Mrs. Avon. She's dressed in Chinese-type lounging pajamas, and she's not wearing the dark lens specs. You look at her eyes, and a chill goes through you like winter's suddenly gotten into the marrow of your bones. Wild eyes, quick-moving, darting, half-mad eyes. The pupils dilated almost to the rim.
Something, Mr. Chambers?
A few questions.
Questions? Why questions of me?
Well, I've got a hunch I've stumbled on something the police don't know.
Like what?
Like you had a thing going with Alan Lewis. Your husband, you hope, didn't know about it.
But I...
There are letters. You saved them. Right, Mrs. Avon?
Yes.
You were there last night?
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Avon. Now, where's the gun? Do you have it?
You say the police don't know. Perhaps, I mean, I have
Look,
money.
I'm one of the dumb ones. I'm allergic to bribery. Now, where's the gun?
I have it. It's hidden here, hidden in the apartment.
Will you get it, please?
Yes. Yes, I'll get it. It's my own gun.
You wait while she goes for it, and you don't like it. But you haven't got the time to work it out now, because she's coming back, and she's carrying the thing, a chunky nickel-plated item. And she's holding it, business end forward. You get a scratched hip and a hole in your pants. And you're all ready to slug her, but you don't have to, because she slides down in a faint. You get the gun away from her, find brandy, pour a lot into her, and a little into yourself. And finally, she starts coming to.
I fainted.
You certainly did, lady.
I'm ill. I'm under the care of a psychiatrist. Gunshot, the sound of gunshot. One shot, and I pass out. Even if I do it myself, I pass out.
What happened last night?
Almost like it happened here. I was there before he was, and when he came, we argued. I brought the pistol, I was wearing my gloves, and I shot him. And then I fainted. When I came to, I saw he was dead, and I got out of there.
Just a minute. You say you were there before he was? How'd you get in?
I have keys.
You get her to an easy chair, and you call down to Parker at headquarters. You put in a request for a lot of the law, and also for Mr. Charles Avon. Pretty soon, the place is crawling with cops, and you point a finger, and to Lieutenant Parker, you say, I give you a murderer, Lieutenant.
Oh, but you've got it wrong. You're mistaken.
No mistake. It's just where my finger's pointing. I give you, Lieutenant, Mr. Charles Avon.
This guy's nuts.
A lot of things he is. Nuts he ain't. Go on,
no.
Pete.
Here's a guy who comes in and hires me for $5,000 for something the New York City police can do much better and for nothing.
You're stealing my lines, chump.
But the guy's not crazy. He's got a purpose. He's also got a large contempt for the thoroughness of the police, which I haven't.
Start making sense, Petey boy.
Read this. You toss the letter to Detective Lieutenant Parker, and the room is as quiet as a cemetery until he's through reading it.
So?
I found that letter from Mrs. Avon to Alan Lewis. I found it in Lewis's apartment.
Now, wait a minute. We gave that place an extra special going over. That letter wasn't there.
You don't have to convince me. Convince Charles Avon. That baby goes and sees the wrong movies. He's got no confidence in cops.
No question. The letter wasn't there.
But I found it there, so it adds up to plant. Somebody planted it there, wanted it found there. Somebody wanted to implicate Mrs. Nancy Avon.
Who?
Who had access to her mail? Huh? Friend husband, that's who?
No.
Why do you think he hired me? So I could bumble around and find a few things he wanted me to find. Like frustrated love, like that letter, like maybe a confession from Mrs. Avon, which I got.
She confessed?
Doesn't mean a thing. Let me do it chronologically, will
you,
Pete?
Do it any way you like, pal.
Nancy Avon goes there at 7:30 to keep her date.
Yes.
She brings her gun because the young guy's giving her the air. She waits for him, he comes, they argue, she shoots him, and she faints. One shot.
But the guy had two bullet holes in it.
Correct.
But here's how he got the second. Charles Avon's got a hate for both of them, for Alan and for Nancy. Alan's been blackmailing him, plus the wife is sweet on Alan. He's been steeping open her mail, and he knows she's going to meet him last night, so he follows. He follows, hoping against hope for action, and action happens.
And then?
He gets in there, he sees Alan bleeding from the shoulder wound, and the wife in a faint on the floor. He picks up the gun, finishes off Alan, wipes the prints off, puts it back in her hand, and vamooses. She comes to, sees the dead Alan, and she gets out convinced that she killed him.
And then we pick up Charlie on the strength of Miss Toker's story, but the lawyer gets him sprung on a writ.
Right. So this morning, he goes to Lewis's apartment, and he sticks that letter where it can't be missed.
No, I...
Real contempt he has for the efficiency of cops, hasn't he? Anyway, he hires me so I can clean up some loose ends and lay the whole deal in the lady's lap. The minute I saw that letter, I knew it was a plant. It happens that I've got respect for cops. They'd never miss that kind of evidence.
One great big catch.
Now, I know what you're going to say.
What?
How did he get in there twice? Once to croak the guy and once to plant the letter.
Correct.
Mrs. Avon had keys. Mr. Avon made duplicates. He figured he'd have use for them sooner or later. Well, he used them all right, and by now he's disposed of them. But he hasn't disposed of the key maker.
Meaning what?
Meaning that when a guy swipes his wife's keys to make duplicates, he doesn't go far. So you can demonstrate to Mr. Avon about the efficiency of cops by producing, and with dispatch, the neighborhood keymaker who did the job, and that will put the final finger on Mr. Charles Avon.
No, I didn't.
All right, Mr. Avon.
That does it. Charles Avon goes white and topples, and when he gets up, the manacles are around his wrist, and he's babbling his brains out. Lawyer or no lawyer, this time he's going to get locked away for good.
Nice work. Grade A job, Petey. Congratulations.
Well, now. Appreciation from a detective lieutenant to a private eye, that's sweet music indeed. But you start breaking out of there because you're heading for Frankie Toker's place. Appreciation from Detective Lieutenant Parker, good enough. But appreciation from Miss Frankie Toker, well, no.
And there you've had Crime and Peter Chambers. Dane Clark was starred as Peter Chambers. Crime and Peter Chambers transcribed was created and written by Henry Kane. Bill Zuckert was heard as Lieutenant Parker with Leslie Woods, Edgar Staley, and Lawson Zerbe. It was directed by Fred Way. This is Fred Collins inviting you to tune in next week, same time, same station, for Dane Clark in Crime and Peter Chambers. Hear the Oppenheimer story on Heart of the News, tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
That is Crime and Peter Chambers, April 13th, 1954. Show called Charles Avon, Druggist, starring Dane Clark, is heard on NBC. The very first thing I do when I become mayor, Lisa?
Yes.
I lower everybody's property taxes.
Well, I don't live in the city.
Number one, that's
so
the first
I'm
thing.
Need
so
some help here.
I'm lowering everyone's property taxes.
Good.
I'm going to become